This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Thank you, Charles. Good morning, everyone. I thank the UCSF group for the chance to talk to you this morning and sort of debate a little bit in a friendly fashion with Dr. Rapp about whether or not carotid duplex ultrasound testing alone is enough for carotid intervention. I have no disclosures, so I've asked for some help in answering this particular question. And having trained with Dr. Strandis and been there when duplex scanning was developed in the 1970s at the University of Washington, I asked him, and he said, of course, duplex testing is enough for carotid endarterectomy, because at the time when he passed away in 2002, carotid stenting was just coming in, and we know that in many of the clinical trials, you can get into the clinical trials based on duplex testing alone. So he's in agreement. The question is, what is a carotid duplex exam? And when it was developed, it was a comprehensive look at extracranial carotid disease. You measured brachial artery pressures on both sides. Some people don't do that. You did multiple recording sites. There was less emphasis on imaging, but imaging has become part of that to look at plaque characteristics. So it wasn't just a simple exam of looking at the distal common and the proximal internal carotid artery. It was a search to the extent possible of looking for the disease and the extent of disease involving the extracranial carotid, vertebral, and subclavian arteries. So it was always developed as a comprehensive exam. When we look at the goals of carotid duplex testing, the reason we do it isn't necessarily to screen patients. It's to develop a treatment plan for specific patients. And so it's different. When we do a test on the asymptomatic patient, what do we want to do? We want to accurately identify high-grade internal carotid artery stenosis. As we hear from Dr. Rapp, that may be a difficult task to do. We want to exclude severe proximal and distal lesions, and we can do that from waveform analysis. We want to identify disease extent, and we want to identify the normal distal ICA, because we only know that the treatment of asymptomatic disease is designed to treat high-grade focal disease. We don't know what happens to non-focal disease in the asymptomatic patient. And then many of our patients that we intervene on based on serial testing, so we have diagnosed disease progression. The symptomatic patient is a different thing, and we're not really talking about that in this particular debate. But for that, we just have to identify the presence of disease, severe plaque, maybe some plaque characteristics. But then we have other lesions that I think require additional arterial imaging. And I think Dr. Rapp may emphasize the need for additional arterial imaging, possibly in the asymptomatic patient. We've known from a long time, this is from a New England Journal article in 2002, that there is an algorithm for the management of extracranial carotid stenosis, and surgical intervention plays a role for that. Depending upon where you work, you may do endarterectomy or carotid stenting. Today we know that their outcomes are fairly equivalent. But it's based upon clinical indications, stenosis severity, which is an important determining point, medical status of the patient, particularly the asymptomatic patient, and then surgical risk, where the surgeon decides what is the surgical risk of this patient, and then decides that if their surgical risk is less than 3% in an asymptomatic patient, we can go on to carotid intervention. What is the problem with carotid duplex testing that people will talk about? Well, they'll say it's not accurate. Well, really, both with imaging and carotid duplex testing, we are estimating carotid stenosis diameter reduction, because that's what the clinical trials have told us should be our threshold. But if you look at the measurement of carotid stenosis by angiography, interpreter disagreement is in the range of 8 to 17% in the literature. This is a very good article by Kirk Beach that was published in Vascular and Endovascular Surgery in 2002. As you know, Kirk Beach worked for years with Dr. Strandness in developing the criteria and validating the criteria in natural history of carotid disease. And in this sort of complicated chart, the point is, in published series, there's wide variations of threshold criteria, both peak systolic and end diastolic, for various clinically important disease categories, 50%, 70%, 80%. We'll talk a little bit more about this as we go through this. We have published criteria that have been developed by consensus conference of specialists. This is the Society of Radiologists and Ultrasound that give us various criteria. And as you can see, in the greater than 70% category, you need a peak velocity of greater than 230, a ratio greater than 4, end diastolic greater than 100, and a plaque that shows severe lumen reduction, more than 50%. So that's what we're sort of interested in the asymptomatic patient. But I think I stress on this, I think this is more of screening criteria than maybe not decision criteria used by vascular surgeons. This is data from a paper that I published a number of years ago that looked at cerebral arteriography and duplex scanning, where we use an end diastolic velocity of greater than 125 as our criteria for greater than 75% stenosis, which was what we would then operate on in an asymptomatic patient. What's the problem with duplex scanning versus arteriography? It tends to overestimate stenosis by hemodynamic criteria. What's the reason for that? Well, many times they have contralateral disease. They have contralateral disease due to IC occlusion, where we may have increased velocities because of compensatory collateral flow. So I always caution people when they're using duplex alone to select patients, you got to pick your criteria and or use multiple criteria to have the positive predictive value in that particular patient. This is plots from Dr. Beach's article that he wrote with Dr. Zieler that was published that looked at best criteria. The plots are somewhat complicated, but I put down the bottom line. So if you look at everything that's published in the literature, what was good studies that Dr. Beach and Zieler were happy about, and you looked at greater than 70% stenosis, what criteria would you use? Peak velocities of greater than 280 for native arteries, greater than 320 for stented arteries. If you looked at end diastolic velocity, it was an end diastolic velocity of greater than 104 for native arteries, greater than 130 for stented arteries. So if you want criteria that's based upon a large experience, greater than 2,000 observations for the native arteries and 1,300 for the end diastolic velocities. These are numbers that that can be extracted from the literature and have undergone a careful analysis. Should we have, for either the asymptomatic or the symptomatic patient, a consensus for interpretation? In other words, you need certain criteria to intervene based on duplex testing alone. And would practitioners follow this? Well, I think for the symptomatic patient, it's difficult. For the asymptomatic patient, I would say that, one, you ought to have complex plaque and internal carotid artery bulb, that you ought to meet all these criteria. The more criteria you have, the higher the positive predictive value that you would have in that individual patient. So if you have a patient, asymptomatic, peak velocity greater than 300, end diastolic greater than 100, ratio greater than 4, you're fairly confident. I would say the positive predictive value would be in the high 80s to about 90% that person has a greater than 70% diameter-reducing stenosis. Dr. Stranis has one more final comment for you. Remember, I use an end-diastolic velocity of greater than 140 centimeters per second in my asymptomatic patients as criteria for intervention. And that was based upon his natural history studies. So carotid intervention based on duplex testing, I think you'll find in the literature and in many people's experience that it's safe and performed by the majority of vascular surgeons in America. Additional arterial imaging, typically CTA, should be, I think, patient-specific and based upon clinical presentation and the duplex testing results. And I think that's why it's good that we interpret our own diagnostic studies in terms of looking at the duplex imaging itself. Symptomatic patients, I think, need much more extensive workup. And I'll be interested in Dr. Rapp's comments in that regard. Thank you.
So I have the counter argument. And this is based on data that I will show you that we accumulated a few years ago at the VA to show that the ultrasound is really not accurate enough in the asymptomatic patient. And the reason for this is that the stroke risk in these patients is very low, and the benefit from surgery is narrow. So you can take the stroke risk for these folks from the multi-center, you know, all the trials that have been done, and we have a stroke risk that's 11% and change, 12% perhaps, and we over at 5 years, and we reduce this to 5%. So we're reducing it 1% per year. So this is a narrow margin of benefit, and if this benefit is to be justified, we need to operate on those people who actually do indeed have a stroke risk of 11%. That is, they actually have the disease. So let's see. There's a little vote here with your little pad that's in front of you. So 95% of carotid endarterectomies are actually done on the basis of Doppler ultrasound alone. So is this justified, in your opinion? No, it's not accurate enough, or you're not sure. Well, it's closer than I would have thought. But I thought I had a bigger hill to climb here, so maybe there's hope. So the literature supporting the use of Doppler ultrasound is a suspect. There's a well-known verification bias. That is, if you're looking for a lesion when you're doing a study, the more likely it is the test will find it. Poor quality studies are excluded in most of these series. The series are not prospective. They're generally retrospective analysis of the data. But I'm not going to talk about that. That's a separate problem. I'm going to talk about the machine itself, the exam itself, and the real problem is that the ultrasound technology is just not accurate enough. The first clue that this is true, Dennis actually has shown some of this, that laboratory standards vary. Is it ICA, CCA, peak systolic velocity that we're going to pay attention to, ICA, peak systolic velocity, ICA, end-diastolic velocity? Are we going to use a combination of parameters, which I actually think Dennis is absolutely correct, should be done? And even when the labs agree on what parameters they're going to use, they don't agree on the criteria. So why is this? Why is ultrasound so inaccurate? The machines are not standardized. Actually, they are standardized. They're standardized on a string running through a water bath. Sound like a carotid? When machines are tested, and this is indeed old data, we have newer data doing a similar exam, in established accredited vascular laboratories, differences in determining velocities are found between machines of up to 18%. This is actually optimistic. When we did it, using a more rigorous, this was using technologists, we did it with a acrylic standards so that it had a stenosis of 60, 80, and 99%. And we had it on a stage so that the probe actually measured exactly the same area of stenosis with exactly the same angle, which we'll talk about in a minute. The differences were up to 25%, with one machine having greater than 30% increase in peak systolic velocity. What this data looks like is this graph showing that in the area where we're interested, the 250 centimeters per second, one machine is 200, another is 300. How are we going to agree with this? What do we know? How does this make any sense? Well, how can you make a decision based on this? And the problem is, this is inherent to the machines. It's inherent within manufacturers and actually within the same model from the manufacturer. So the second point, variation between technologists. So this is from Wayne Johnson's lab in Toronto, well-accepted vascular surgeon, well-respected. Three technologists, multiple years of experience, compared results on 31 patients with a spectrum of disease. Variation in peak systolic velocity in individual patients ranged from minus 25 to plus 43% from the mean of the three technologists. When other technologists were compared, the results were actually not that much better. Well, why do technologists vary so much? And Lori, no, I'm not bad-mouthing the technologists. And in fact, Dr. Bandick, I'm sure, is sitting there saying, WTF, who are these people that are getting this data? Well, let's see who they are. Dr. Bandick and Dr. Aburama have edited a book on vascular ultrasound. And Amazon, as I looked at this, invited me to go inside, which I did. This is figure 18 on page 229. It's got some very scary data. So if the 60-degree value is used, you have a flow of 200 centimeters per second. If you're off 5 degrees, let's see what 5 degrees is. It's about that. You're off 15%, and if you're off 10 degrees, you're off 30%, plus or minus. Finally, heroic efforts by technologists and lab managers to get their data validated and compare their results and have reproducible results. You still have to deal with the basic vagaries of the disease itself. So this is a 2-micron laser slice, and you'll see it come through here as a cine, on a model, one of our acrylic models made from spline data from high-resolution MRI data set. If you use peak systolic velocity, the data will be misleading. And the reason is, yes, there's an 80% stenosis here, but the peak flow is actually out here in this vortex. So, in spite of this, Doppler ultrasound results are, in fact, respectable, in large measure due to tremendous amount of work done by the vascular surgeons who've made this a specialty and have worked very hard to get it to be reproducible. And, in fact, individuals, this is Dr. Aburama's lab, have reported outstanding results. Unfortunately, this article would not be included in rigorous reviews of ultrasound data, which finds an overall sensitivity of 83%, specificity of 54%, and accuracy of about 70 to 80%. So there's another solution, and this is a commonly held belief, that if you make a cut point high enough, as Dr. Strandis did with his asymptomatic carotid, you increase accuracy. Is that true? Well, Dr. Basuni, when he was at the University of Chicago, looked at this in terms of peak systolic velocity. Yes, you improve accuracy to a point, and then it falls off. Same thing with end-diastolic velocity, and the same thing with ICA-CCA ratio. The problem, bottom line, and of course in most of these debates, the real debated issue is a fine degree of attitude between the two debaters. I think Dennis and I probably mostly agree, no imaging study is perfect. In fact, the so-called gold standard, as I'm sure you're all aware, angiography, is the least reliable in terms of accurately depicting the degree of stenosis. However, we believe, and our practice has been, that a second study, MRA or CTA, increased the accuracy of patient selection. And indeed, this article, I think, nicely depicts that. Yes, that practice will increase cost, and yes, it may reduce the number of CEAs done, but we get an ultrasound with a patient who has a high degree of stenosis. We get an MRA, usually in our institutions. We like MRAs better than CTAs. It depends on the institution. And we find that often the stenosis just does not warrant intervention at this time. And I think vascular surgeons should lead by showing our integrity that we worry about these patients, as I know that we all do, and when there's any question, we get a verifying study. And I'm very pleased to have another quote out of this very nice book edited by Dr. Bandick, which is, if a stenosis of 60 to 99% is detected, this is on page 229, I believe, and the patient is good risk, MRA CTA can be done to complement the findings of the ultrasound, and if confirmed, a CEA is recommended. Couldn't agree more. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.